We all know the word antioxidants. You know, they're the good guys, battling those free radicals that are constantly trying to wreck ourselves. For years, the conversation has centered on these bulky vitamins like C and E, or maybe glutathione.
Right, they're usual suspects.
But what if the real revolution in cellular protection isn't some complex synthesized compound, but the absolute smallest molecule in the universe?
It sounds totally counterintuitive, doesn't it? But you've just hit on the core of our deep dive today. Molecular hydrogen, H. This molecule weighs just two Daltons. I mean, it is incredibly small, but its therapeutic potential is turning out to be huge.
And we're digging into this because a listener came to us with a really critical question.
They did. Basically asking, are all these claims about HRO water and other therapies, for anti-aging, disease prevention, are they actually legit? Are they effective? And maybe most importantly, are they safe? Or is this just another wellness trend?
And the body of scientific literature we reviewed, we're talking clinical trials, cutting-edge nanomedicine, it all suggests the claims are, well, surprisingly well-founded, provided you understand the mechanics. So our mission today is to synthesize these sources, focus on HE's unique action, the different ways we can get it into the body.
And those are not all created equal, not by a long shot.
And then look at its broad, validated applications across major disease areas.
But the most crucial concept here, I mean, if you only take away one thing, this is it, is that H isn't just an antioxidant. It is specifically a selective antioxidant.
Selective antioxidant.
And that single distinction is the bedrock of its advantage over really every traditional supplement you can find on a shelf.
Okay, let's unpack that term selective, starting with the problem it's trying to solve. We hear oxidative stress all the time, right? It's linked to aging, chronic inflammation.
Pretty much every non-communicable disease, yeah.
So what's the actual dangerous threat here? The one HRO is designed to neutralize.
The main chemical bad guy, the agent of just indiscriminate cellular chaos, is the hydroxyl radical. That's our OH. This thing is intensely reactive. It's produced naturally, just as a byproduct of metabolism.
The cost of breathing.
The cost of breathing, essentially. But its production gets spiked by things like pollution, radiation, inflammation. And because it's so hyperreactive, it just attacks and damages everything in its path. DNA, proteins, cell membranes. It's the ultimate cellular wrecking ball.
But doesn't the body already have its own systems? You know, antioxidants like vitamin C or glutathione to manage that general free radical load. Why is the hydroxyl radical such a hard target?
Well, it's not just a hard target. It's the issue of collateral damage. See, conventional antioxidants, they try to neutralize everything indiscriminately. But here's the key biological paradox. Your body actually needs certain reactive oxygen species, or ROS, compounds like superoxide anion and hydrogen peroxide. They're not just waste
So
products.
they're like tiny chemical messengers.
Exactly. They regulate cell growth. They trigger essential immune responses. They help maintain homeostasis. So if you take a massive dose of a traditional antioxidant that just wipes out all ROS,
You're interfering with those vital pathways.
you are. You're disrupting essential biological function.
Okay, so the body needs to keep the critical signal messengers, but eliminate the indiscriminate wrecker, the OH. And that's where HROs comes in. It's the surgical strike, not the nuclear option. How does the chemistry let it do that? How does it differentiate?
It has this unique low-level reactivity. It's selective. It only targets the most cytotoxic species, so mainly the hydroxyl radical and also peroxynitrite. But critically, it does not react with or disrupt those physiologically necessary ROS.
It's a molecular scalpel.
It really is a perfect description.
And it's all captured in a really simple chemical reaction. Give us the formula, because the simplicity here is what should really stick with you.
It's surprisingly simple, and the result is completely harmless. Molecular hydrogen, HRO, donates electrons to those harmful hydroxyl radicals
And turns them into.
to a benign water. The reaction is just HURO plus 2OH yields 2HURO.
Harmful radical in, harmless water out.
It's the scientific equivalent of turning poison into sustenance.
So beyond that selective chemistry, its physical size is its superpower. You said it's the smallest molecule. That means it has exceptional penetration power, right? Where does that really matter?
It matters everywhere, but especially in delicate tissues. Because H-Uro is so tiny and nonpolar, it has incredible diffusivity. It just zips right through cell membranes. It gets deep into the mitochondrial matrices where most of this oxidative damage actually starts. And most importantly, for severe conditions, it's one of the very few therapeutic agents that can effortlessly cross the blood-brain barrier.
And crossing that barrier is crucial. Most conventional drugs, these bulky compounds, they just get blocked. They can't protect the brain during a crisis like a stroke.
Exactly. So HRSIZE makes it the stealthiest delivery system there is. It's bioavailability and speed of action in those delicate, inaccessible tissues. It's just a massive advantage over bigger antioxidant compounds.
Okay, so the mechanism is validated. It's compelling. Now for the practical question, how do we get enough of it into the body to actually be useful? Our sources analyze several different routes, and this is essential because the efficacy changes dramatically depending on the method.
It really does. So let's start with the most common one for the general public, which is hydrogen-rich water, or HRW.
This is the stuff you see, you know, in special generators, tablets, packaged drinks. What's the scientific verdict on it for systemic issues?
The pros are obvious. It's convenient, it's low cost, and it's safe. And studies do show it can be pretty beneficial for targeted health, like in the mouth and the gut.
So like suppressing periodontal disease or GI inflammation.
Right. But the limitation is its poor pharmacokinetics for systemic use. HR just has very low solubility in water. The max is about 1.6 milligrams per liter.
Not a lot.
Not a lot. And after you drink it, a huge majority, some sources say over 90%, is just rapidly lost through your breath. So its concentration in your systemic circulation is pretty low and very transient.
Okay, wait, that sounds like a massive paradox. If the systemic dose is that low, why do we still see positive results cited in the sources for things like metabolic syndrome or type 2 diabetes? Those are systemic issues.
That's a critical point, and it highlights the difference between chronic modulation and acute crisis intervention. The consensus seems to be that for chronic inflammation-driven conditions, even a very small, consistent reduction in that basal oxidative stress from drinking HRW.
Day after day.
Day after day. It might be just enough to nudge biomarkers like LDL cholesterol and glucose metabolism in the right direction over time. It's a low-dose, long-term approach.
So HRW is likely effective for maintenance or local issues, but it's really inefficient for a widespread systemic crisis, a severe stroke, for example.
Exactly. For that acute scenario, the scientific workhorse for high controlled dosing is something else entirely.
And that would be H-aero gas inhalation.
That's the one. This is the method that's most widely studied in acute clinical settings. It allows for rapid, high, and controlled dosing. You breathe it in, the gas rapidly saturates the blood through the lungs, and it permeates all body regions. It's the primary method for acute neurological and respiratory disorders.
We have to do a quick safety check here because hydrogen is volatile.
Yeah.
How do clinicians manage the risk of explosion when they need these high concentrations?
A necessary question. The risk exists when the H-Uro concentration in an oxygen mix exceeds 4%. But standard clinical treatments use low, safe doses, like 2 to 4%.
But sometimes they go higher.
They do. And what's really validating about this therapy is that clinicians are willing to go much higher when the benefit outweighs the risk. For example, the China National Health Commission recommended a mix where H-Uro was 66%,
wow,
mixed with 33% oxygen for treating severe COVID-19 patients. It shows that specialized, calibrated equipment can manage this safely and effectively in a crisis.
That's a powerful data point,
yeah,
a real-world validation. Okay, so shifting from inhalation, what about the most direct route? Injections.
Right. That's hydrogen-rich saline, or HRS.
Yeah.
Basically, HROs is dissolved into saline at high pressure and then administered intravenously or intraperitoneally.
And this is reserved almost exclusively for acute care clinical intervention.
Absolutely. Things like immediately following an ischemia reperfusion injury in an organ.
Okay, this is a great place to highlight the different strategies. Can you just summarize the pharmacokinetic contrast between these three main methods?
Sure. Think of it as peak speed versus sustained presence. An IV injection of HRS gets the maximum concentration in the blood the fastest. It peaks in just 1 minute.
1 minute.
Oral ingestion, like the water, peaks around 5 minutes. Moderate speed. Inhalation is slower to reach peak saturation, but you can maintain it for the longest duration, often for 60 minutes or more.
So the delivery method is a strategic choice.
It's entirely strategic. You use IV for the immediate acute crisis and inhalation for sustained systemic protection.
And just briefly, what about those other very localized methods?
You mean like the specialized routes? There are hydrogen baths for absorption through the skin, great for skin issues or muscle recovery. And they're even developing hydrogen gobbles for targeted relief of eye issues, like dry eye.
Okay, the mechanisms are clear. The delivery methods are stratified. So now let's see where the evidence base really takes us. The scope here extends into some of the most challenging areas of medicine. Let's start with cancer and the immune system.
In oncology, HRO acts as a critical adjunct therapy. That means it complements standard treatments like chemo and radiotherapy. It's not a standalone cure.
Okay.
Its primary crucial role is mitigating toxicity. H has been shown to alleviate severe side effects, nephrotoxicity, liver injury, bone marrow damage, without compromising the anti-tumor effect of the main treatment.
It's a compelling dual action.
It is. And the source material highlights a really technical immunological finding that connects HRO to modern cancer therapy.
I found this fascinating.
Yeah, it is. In cancer patients, especially with advanced colorectal or lung cancer, the body's T cells, the immune cells that fight the tumor, they become exhausted.
They just stop working.
They stop working. This is marked by an abundance of what are called PD-1 positive, CD8 positive T cells. And HRS helps restore the function of these depleted T cells by reducing this exhaustion marker.
Now, PC1 should sound familiar to anyone who follows cancer news. It's the target of those multi-billion dollar checkpoint inhibitor drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So is HR working on the same pathway, just through a different mechanism?
That's exactly right. Checkpoint inhibitors block the PD-1 receptor externally. It seems to work internally, directly targeting and correcting the mitochondrial dysfunction inside the T cells themselves that causes the exhaustion.
So it's revitalizing the cellular powerhouses.
Yes, and by doing that, it improves the prognosis and survival rate in these advanced cancer patients.
That's a powerful synergy. Okay, moving to the neurological front, HRO's ability to cross the blood-brain barrier is paramount. What does the evidence say about brain protection?
It shows significant success in acute conditions. H offers profound neuroprotection in models of stroke, subarachnoid hemorrhage, brain injury after cardiac arrest, anywhere you need immediate antioxidative intervention to stop cascading cell death.
But when we shift to chronic conditions like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, which is where the public often places their hopes, the results in the sources get a bit mixed. Why the inconsistency?
This is where we need to be really cautious and analytical. Small preliminary studies using the oral H water, they showed promising symptomatic relief for both AD and PD.
And I remember one study noted that people with a specific APOE4 genetic risk factor saw significant cognitive improvement.
They did. But the larger study, specifically for Parkinson's using oral HR water, they largely showed no significant benefit.
And that inconsistency probably links right back to what we were just talking about.
Dosing. For severe progressive neurological diseases, the extremely low transient systemic dose you get from HRW is probably just insufficient to counteract the ongoing cellular destruction. It really underscores the need for large randomized trials using the most effective delivery methods, like inhalation.
And stratifying patients based on genetics to see who responds best.
Exactly.
So beyond the brain, HRO has also been used for systemic conditions, respiratory and metabolic health.
Correct. For acute respiratory inflammation, it's effective in reducing symptoms in asthma and COPD. And as we mentioned, the fact that an HRO oxygen mix was officially recommended in China's national guidance for COVID-19 treatment is a massive real-world validation.
And metabolically. The HRO water seems to have just enough systemic punch to help out.
Yeah. In patients with metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes, consuming hydrogen-rich water, despite that low absorption rate, was shown to decrease LDL cholesterol and improve lipid and glucose metabolism. Again, it points to its potential as a very safe chronic modulator of generalized inflammation.
Okay, we've covered the mechanism, delivery, and application. Let's confront the elephant in the room, clinical acceptance. Given that we're talking about inhaling concentrations up to 66%, we have to talk about safety. What's the unanimous consensus on toxicity?
What's fascinating here is the absolute consensus on its safety. Molecular hydrogen has an exceptional safety profile, regardless of the method, inhalation, water, injection, baths. It's biologically inert and non-toxic.
But why? Why is it inherently non-toxic, even at those high concentrations?
Three main reasons. First, it's quickly and completely eliminated from the body through your breath, so it can't accumulate. Second, and this is crucial, HRO does not bind to hemoglobin,
which eliminates the risks you see with other gases like carbon monoxide.
Exactly. And third, our own gut bacteria produce significant quantities of it every day, so our bodies are physiologically adapted to its presence. Across all the human studies, very few adverse reactions have ever been reported.
So we have a safe, selective therapeutic gas, proven mechanism, encouraging small-scale results. So what's the holdup for its integration into standard Western medicine? Why isn't this in every hospital?
The main roadblock, unfortunately, is the classic clinical gap. It's a regulatory and documentation issue, not a scientific one. Despite having over 80 registered clinical trials, HRO medicine is still considered in its infancy clinically. Most of the research just lacks those large-scale, multi-center, randomized controlled trials, the RCTs, that are the absolute gold standard for universal acceptance.
And I imagine the sheer variability in protocols that doesn't help with reproducibility.
Precisely. The dosing and concentration protocols are all over the place. We've seen inhaled doses from a standard 2% all the way up to that crisis level 66%. Until a standardized framework defines the right dose for the right duration for each specific condition, it's just going to be hard to integrate into standard practice.
Sounds like years of standardization work ahead. But innovation continues, regardless of regulatory speed. What does the cutting edge of H delivery look like?
The future is all about solving those solubility and dissipation issues through targeted precision therapy, nanomedicine.
Okay.
Researchers are developing what are essentially H prodrugs. These are innovative nanomaterials like palladium hydride nanoparticles or specialized magnesium and silicon particles.
And how do those work to improve the delivery?
These nanoparticles are designed to be stable until they reach target environment. So once they hit the diseased site, say, the inflammatory environment of the GI tract for chronic bowel disease, they undergo a chemical reaction that generates H in situ.
Right on the spot.
Exactly where it's needed. This allows for precise, controlled release of ultra-high concentrations of H, overcoming the problems that plague simple HRO water. It's the next logical step.
That neatly summarizes our deep dive. Molecular hydrogen really stands out, not just as another supplement, but as a scientifically demonstrated selective therapeutic gas. It's proven its safety, and it shows immense promise across acute scenarios, like brain ischemia, and chronic conditions, like metabolic syndrome.
And often synergistically, enhancing existing treatments while radically minimizing toxicity.
So if we connect all this evidence to the bigger picture.
Yeah, given its demonstrated efficacy as a non-toxic adjunct therapy, I mean, reducing the worst side effects of chemo and radiation, improving outcomes and life-threatening injuries, the current hurdle isn't really proving HRO works mechanistically.
No, the hurdle is meeting those rigorous multi-year demands with standardized clinical documentation.
Right. And this raises an important question, one for you, the listener, to explore. When you're dealing with severe diseases that either lack standard treatment options or where current treatments severely compromise a patient's quality of life, how quickly should a safe, mechanism-validated adjunctive therapy like HRO be integrated into patient care? What benefits are patients currently missing out on because of these regulatory and documentation delays?